Auto Press episode 35.
What number do we have for that? Is that your age?
35. No, I'm 36. That'll be next week.
Wow. I didn't know.
35 times.
More credit.
How have we done this 35 times?
Dude, that's impressive. Did you think we'd keep making it?
No.
I thought Anna would put an end to it.
You've said that a lot of times.
Yeah. I'm still
concerned. We'll do this as long as Anna allows it.
Every time I hear footprints like in the kitchen when we're doing this, I'm really concerned that she's just having a meltdown.
No, we're good. We're good. But we had the NET Championship this past weekend.
We had a lot this past weekend. Do you want to start there? Do you want to start about your tournament? Because you played a tournament this weekend. You played a gross event.
Let's start with the NET Championship.
The NET Championship.
Yeah. Rory comes from five back.
Dominated.
Wins by four.
Yeah. It was impressive.
Capped off his mediocre year.
One thing, I mean, it seems okay in theory to try and get these top guys coming down the stretch, but there were like three guys that could win it going in the third round, you know?
Right.
And that's just kind of disappointing. Like, I like to have close finishes, and Rory won going away no matter what. I mean, he shot 267 on the week, but there was just no contender.
If it'd been a stroke play event, I saw he was 13 and maybe Brooks was 10.
Brooks, maybe.
Remember, Xander was 10. Paul and then Casey somebody was 7.
I think Paul Casey got close to 10. Did he end up at 7? He might have messed up coming down.
Yeah, but
I don't know. It was cool. My favorite thing, I mean, you knew where everybody stand. There was no guessing game.
Right.
That was neat. I just think that the match play would be a way better version.
But then the thing that's annoyed me about the playoffs is that people were mad Justin Thomas had a two-shot lead, and they're like, he's only won once this year. People don't understand, like you said, it's the playoffs. Yeah. Like, it's a new season.
Well, did you see Brooks Koepka? He brought up the Patriots thing.
Yeah, he must have been listening.
Yeah, had to be.
I mean, the Bills could beat the Patriots in the playoffs, right? And they're out.
Yeah, they don't get another chance. The Patriots are... It doesn't matter if they won every game. They're out.
Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that. But then another thing that just kind of I thought was dumb was I saw people tweeting like, oh, this is must-see TV. These guys are playing for $15 million. That doesn't – I mean, yes, that's a ton of money, but it's not like these guys – it's not like Rory's the only one getting paid this week. Paul right, Casey – finished fifth and made $2.5 million, which is more than he's made at any other event.
The top five players, their bonus pay was more than anybody earned from one tournament winning this whole year.
Yeah.
Like,
that's kind of dumb, but yeah. I don't feel like that's must see TV.
No, I watched enough of it on Sunday. I mean, it was in Atlanta. I kind of wish I had gone, but it was definitely an interesting take to have that all going on. I mean, after day one, it seemed like a genius idea because it was just piled up at the top, tons of guys right there, and then they just all kind of fizzled out, which I guess would have happened anyway.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. What Way to go, Rory.
What would you do with $15 million?
Not work anymore.
Yeah, why is he going to grind next year's, like, see ya.
Yeah.
I'm going to go live somewhere cool. Maybe he still loves golf. Play golf somewhere just for fun. Like, you don't have to travel. Robert Streb, we just interviewed Robert Streb. He said he's on the road 30 weeks a year plus.
Yeah.
Like, you just got $15 million. Take it easy.
Yeah. I mean,
I've always wondered that when you get these football guys and basketball guys, why do they grind so much in the off season between their seasons? Like, you're getting paid.
Because they're going to get another huge, they're trying to get another huge contract of
$100 and something million. I mean, Andrew Luck just retired. I guess enough's enough at one point.
True.
Yeah. Rory's ear went from mediocre to great.
that quick.
How many times did I say it was mediocre this year? He had more top tens this year than any other year.
I think he had 13 top tens.
14, I think, maybe.
14. Yeah. Three wins.
Yeah. Enjoy. No major. But mediocre.
It is funny, though, because you said that because of his performance in the majors.
Right. We forgot about the West Coast swing right away where he was like fifth every week.
Right. Well, no, I mean, he played great all the time except the majors. He finished 20-something at the Masters. He wasn't in the PGA. He missed a cut at the British. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. He wasn't in there at the U.S. Open either. I mean, he didn't perform at all in the majors. No. And that's... But I think that goes to the point of those guys making... Of him making $15 million. I think that takes away a lot of drive to win from some of those guys.
You'd think so.
I mean, Paul Casey gets, like we said, $2.5 million for finishing fifth.
Right.
I mean, how motivated are you really?
Did he win? He won this year, didn't he?
Yes. I can't remember where.
He didn't defend the Valspar?
We can look it up. But
he won early in the year.
He definitely won. But yeah, I think that goes why you don't see a lot of guys end up, you know, really winning other than Tiger.
Some other good stories. I mean, you don't see it all throughout the whole week, but I know they come out with some awards, and Tiger's probably going to get the comeback player of the year for, would it be the second year he gets it?
I don't know. Keep up with those silly awards.
Lucas Glover making the Tour Championship was very impressive.
Yes, that's very
true. His wife must be very happy. I mean,
but he didn't play good at the...
Doesn't that last place in the Tour Championship made like $400,000. I don't know if you follow Kevin Kisner on Twitter.
Hold on real quick. You were right. Paul Casey defended the Valspar.
Back-to-back Valspar?
Yep.
Boom. Golf knowledge.
Yep.
But Kevin Kisner this week on Twitter, Barstool Sports tweeted at him, and they were like, hey, how do you feel being 10 shots back of the leads to start the week? He goes, doesn't matter. I'm still going to make more this week just for showing up than you will all year. to one of the bloggers. I love that. Mm. I don't know. Corn Ferry this week, B-Tot had another good week. One bad round on Saturday.
Yeah. I think 20th. Still locked up.
He's still there to maybe make a run at the number one spot.
I think he has to win.
Has to win. Are there more points this week? Or no, same amount?
Same amount. So he's more than second place is 500.
Why would he have to win?
Because somebody's more than 500 points ahead of him. That Matt Neesmith that won.
He had a better week the week before.
Well, you just get so many points for winning. Yeah, and yeah. Brendan tied for second. He got like 415.
Okay.
He's at like 498, and that Matt Neesmith is like 1,000 and
he hit every green on Friday.
You're talking about Brendan, yeah.
Yeah, Brendan Todd.
I signed up for a lesson with Bradley Hughes this weekend.
Was that after a cocktail hour at the...
Yes. Absolutely.
Did you wake up the next morning and have an email notification? You were like, oh.
I wasn't like, oh, but I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely signed up for a lesson.
Got to go to Greenville. Well, it's in a couple weeks.
First, I texted Brad, and I said, hey, are you coming to Nathan's anytime soon? Because I want a lesson.
I might go up. When are you doing it? September 13th?
Yeah, and he wrote me back, and he said that he thought he was just going to let Brendan run like a thoroughbred through the pasture.
What day is that?
It's a Friday.
Wow. I might just have to
Said, all right, I'm just going to sign up.
Online schedule tomorrow. I might have to piggyback up. We'll ride up there together.
Yeah, so... lesson coming up, 4:30.
What inspired you to do this? Were you not hitting it well?
JP's referencing, I went and played with Yogi in the, what was supposed to be the Willow Point in Alexander City, Alabama. It was supposed to be the Willow Point AM, where mm-hmm. a little four-ball event, just kind of with their club, and you bring a guest or whoever you want. Next thing I know, they've turned it into the inaugural Southeast Mid-Am four-ball. And I was like, oh, God. Like, I was thinking we'd get on there and just...
Big time event.
I was thinking we're just going to kind of show up and have a good time, a bunch of drinks. And then they cut from 30 to 20 teams after 2 days. And I was like... mean, we shot one under the first day.
Not good.
Not good. We were in like 22nd.
Yeah. I was like, oh. We were watching live scoring.
We need to. Well, it started out the first day. We both hit it in the fairway bunker. Yogi hit it, and it hit the lip and went in the water. Mm. And then I hit one that landed pin high and went in the water over the green.
You had to get up and down for
so
bogey.
So I had to make a really good up and down for bogey. I had to make like a 5-footer for bogey on the first hole. Jeez. It's like, oh, man, what have we signed up for?
Little boy in good shape, though.
Great shape. We rallied for one under, and then coming out Saturday morning, I made a bomb on number two. Yogi made a bomb on four. Yogi makes a 20-footer on five. I birdied six. I mean, we had a roll, and we actually ended up having an 8-under through 15.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then I got a little frisky on 16. I had like a 25-footer that I knew I was going to make, and I three-putted. Lost a little momentum, but we got in. We made the cut.
It was fun to follow.
We had a good time.
Fun to hear the stories. Not only were you live scoring, but you were live texting the group and letting us know if you chipped in or stuffed one. And
yeah, Dr. Yogi Page, Dr. Chipinski.
What's the story? You met one of my good buddies, Alex Balog.
So
you recognized your voice at the cocktail party?
It was after after the round the first day. We were inside eating lunch, and Yogi knew who he was, and he's like, that's JP's buddy, Alex Balog. And I was like, I gotta go talk to him. And so I went up to him, and I said, hey, I heard that you tried to send JP a video for Brad Hughes to break down your swing. He's like, oh, I know the voice. So we had a good laugh. And
that's great.
I think they played okay.
Yeah, they had a good showing. They made the cut, and they were right around you. I don't know. I can't recall who won or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. If you don't win, you're last.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a good time.
How many how do you say it? Marlboro? I'm struggling here.
Marlboro?
Marlboro. I tell you, my tongue swells up with some words.
You're not even drinking tonight.
I know. Marlboro. That's a weird word for me to say.
Marlboro.
Is that Yogi's brand?
You know, the only time that he smoked a few in a car, but not while we were playing golf.
None.
Mm-mm.
Dang.
Mm-mm. But no one. I got toured all around Alex City. Got on Lake Martin. We had a great time.
That cabin's the best.
That cabin
is awesome.
That cabin. Let me tell you how you get to this cabin that JP speaks of. You leave the golf course. You take about three turns, and next thing you know, you're turning down a dirt road. There's a quarry to the left.
Yeah.
There's hunting land to the right, and then you veer off down a gravel dirt road down a hill.
Pretty steep.
Steep, and you come around the corner, and there's just a cabin there.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Yogi, and I think I texted everybody, I was like, if this is an elaborate ruse to take me out somewhere and kill me, y'all planned it perfectly.
Great job.
I felt like I may never get out of there.
My Honda Civic made it down there.
Oh, we made it down, but it was a quaint little cabin. It's got two bedrooms, yeah. A back deck, right, a dock. I mean, if you've never been to Lake Martin, you can see probably 6 or 8 feet down in the lake. It is the cleanest lake.
They ran out of hot water the times I was there because people like Greg Lee or whatever were taking too long of a shower. So I ended up bathing in the lake. I had Snake bring me shampoo, I think.
I think they told me that.
Yeah.
Because they asked if I was going to do that. And I said no, but anyway, Lake Martin is beautiful. Yeah. Willow Point is an amazing golf course. I mean, the greens were rolling 12. The fairways are like turf.
I heard a rumor somewhere. I can't remember who it was. And hopefully I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I don't really care, though. But there's a rumor that Willow Point's maybe designing another golf course.
I heard some sort of that, but I don't think it's Willow Point.
It's not.
I think it's other people coming in
it's
somewhere
not
around
part
there.
Of Willow Point.
And I don't think okay. So.
I don't know who it was.
Or you're talking about Russell Lands.
Russell Lands is going to do it.
I think there's a rumor that somewhere else on Russell Lands there's going to be a different golf course designed by different people.
Mm.
But
yeah,
I don't know.
Hopefully they're not a friend of the pod and I'm not having to hear.
Hopefully JP just didn't bring the cat out of the bag on something.
But anyway, we don't want to. There's not much to recap. Everybody knows what happened this week in golf. Rory made $15 million. Web.com has their tour final this week.
Ends Corn on Ferry.
Corn Ferry Tour ends on Monday. Robert Streb is not playing. He locked up his card. He decided not to play this week, but he's a guest that we had tonight on the podcast. Had a really good conversation.
Yep. He played the first two Corn Ferry events, finished 5th and 25th or 20th.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
He's 10th on 30th, the...
30th maybe. I think he was 10 under.
He's 10th on the reshuffle list, and he just said that he wanted to be home and rest up and be ready for the Greenbrier.
But we had a really good conversation with him. A lot of good stories, a lot of good info on his background, path through it. I mean, he's been on tour for a long time. He's been a friend of mine. He played the Monroe like 5 years in a row back when I was still playing it a little bit. So I got to know him pretty well through there. And he's always been a good friend to me.
Anyway, we hope you all enjoy it. And we'll be back next week.
All right. Welcome, everybody. We're joined here with Robert Streb, a good friend of mine dating back to playing amateur golf at the Monroe Invitational. His dad actually grew up playing junior golf with my dad back in Rochester. He's one on tour, one on the nationwide tour, or web.com, Corn Ferry, whatever you want to call it these days. But Robert, we're pretty pumped up to have you here. You secured your card back this year again through the Corn Ferry playoffs. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah. we were just talking real quick and you got cut off, but so you got your card back and now you're taking this week off.
Yeah, might be a little bit risky. I could have gone and tried to improve my number, but I played 9 of the last 10 weeks and you know, pretty worn out, kind of see my kids and figured a little extra rest and getting ready for the Greenbrier might be better than pushing it in the last finals event.
Yeah, and you bring up the Greenbrier. That one of the main things I want to talk about is your success there, and namely a incident that happened one year when you made the playoffs. You played the last 9 holes of the wedge and made 5 birdies.
Yeah, I'm gonna hope that's just a one and done deal. I don't know if I could up to that again.
walk us through what your thought was when you realized that putter was broken.
I tossed it over the bag and wasn't great. The bottom of the bag and bounced off, and then I saw the head flying through the rough, and I was like, "This is gonna be a problem."
Oh, so the whole thing actually flew off.
Oh yeah. It just came off. So I, you know, sitting there thinking about it, spent half of the next hole trying to convince the rules official I needed a putter, and he couldn't grant me that one. So, tried to iron out what to putt with. Caddy is like, well, why don't we stick with the 56 because the edge is straighter. And luckily I hit one close on 10, and I mean, it was a 2-footer and it might add half a revolution left in it when it went in. It didn't get there by much.
Had you ever practiced putting with a wedge before? I mean,
a couple times in college, I had a buddy that would do it, but I always thought I was pretty terrible at it. So I just never gave it much thought.
Were you taking it out of the bag and walking up and being like, man, I must look like a complete fool right now? I mean, I remember watching on TV. You made a couple of long putts too.
Yeah, I did. I made some pretty long ones. Made a pretty good par putt on 12, made a bomb on 13. How else did I make? Made a good one on, I think, 16. The only problem was I got a little overzealous on 17, ran one about 5 feet by and three putted it.
Yeah.
But
birdied 18.
Yeah, it kind of panned out.
Then you didn't even get to use your putter in the playoff. I don't, because like.
I missed the green and I chipped on, and by that time, Danny Lee and David Hearn, I think, made their putts.
Well, let's backtrack. JP jumped right into his favorite story, but so you end up at Kansas State. How'd you end up at Kansas State? Were you recruited by other schools? What was kind of your junior golf career like?
You know, nothing too exciting. You know, I didn't really win too much. I think I won one AJGA event, a few little state things. Basically, I took a few visits around. I think I took one to Texas Tech, Wichita State, Kansas State. You know, OSU really wasn't good enough to go play there, and OU was all full. So, you know, Kansas State ended up being something I liked, and it ended up being a really good place for me.
Did you grow up an Oklahoma or Oklahoma State fan? Were you hurt that they didn't want you? I mean, you grew up with Kevin Tway, right?
Yeah, Kevin and I were on the same high school team. I was just 2 years ahead of Kevin. But yeah, I had a high school teammate play at O State. A couple other guys that had gone there. They were really good players, and just hadn't really panned out for them. I think maybe OU not having any space at all. That one probably hurt more than OSU telling me if I kept playing, you know, I might be able to walk on. So, but, you know, it was good. It made me look somewhere else and, you know, find somewhere else I felt like I could play.
And you had a chance to just go in there and play pretty much right away. So that probably helped a lot.
It did. I don't know who it was, but someone told me, you know, it's probably a pretty good idea when you're checking these colleges out, try to find somewhere, you know, you think you can play and improve instead of maybe having to wait 2 or 3 years to crack the lineup.
Yeah, that was some advice somebody gave me. They were like, go somewhere where you know you can play, because it's not any fun if you're just being on the team.
Sitting around.
Yeah. That's not fun if you're not getting to travel and play. So after college, I mean, I guess, did you always wanted to play pro golf? You know, did you go to the Hooters tour? You went that route, is that correct?
Yeah, I did. You know, ended out doing that for 2 years. I think when I told my mom I wanted to play, I think she thought I was crazy. I never won a college event. I qualified for nationals my freshman year, and I think I got honorable mention my last year, but really had done nothing of any note whatsoever.
You had a few top five finishes at Monroe.
Yeah, I mean, I'd done some things, but I really hadn't won much. So I was like, well, I'll just give it a run and see how it goes. And luckily, they, you know, let me have a pretty good crack at it.
Now, what kind of did you get local sponsors, or how did you kind of get back to coming out of college?
A couple guys helped me out of college, some K-State guys. They gave me a few $1,000, and then you know, my parents kind of helped with the travel and stuff, and I just lived at home. After the first year, they probably could have told me to go find a job, but they let me give it another crack. And second go around, I ended up getting through Q school and getting some status on the, I guess it was Nationwide at the time, and turned over to web.com in the middle of that year.
So was that 2011?
2012.
2012. And then you had a real good year out there, right? In 2012?
I did. Yeah, I ended up, I got in Columbia right out of the gate, missed the cut, and then got in Chile because guys weren't wanting to travel down there. So I had conditional status. And, I finished like 17th, got in Louisiana, finished 24th. So if you finish top 25, you get to keep going. And then I finished 9th in California, and it reshuffled, and I was off and running. And ended up finishing 7th on the money list that year.
Awesome. Never really kind of looked back since then either, have you?
Yeah, I've had a few little ups and downs. But
I mean, you've never been away full time, I guess is what I'm getting at.
No, I played out of the 126 to 150 category my second year. I finished 126 my rookie year. But ended up having a really good year out of that category.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the category, I mean, this year you finished 128. Were you nervous going into the Corn Ferry Finals at all, or were you comfortable knowing you were going to get a bunch of starts from the 126 to 150 plus past champions status?
You never quite know what you're going to get. You know, a couple of friends, David Lingmas and Tyler Van Aston, were playing out of that category. I think they might have got... They were in the back end of it because they didn't shuffle well after the fall. I think they got 13 starts.
Oof.
Maybe 14. And you know, some of those are half pointers. So you never quite know. The year before, the guys got a lot of starts. Yeah, you know, you get something, but you know, I'd much rather play out of the Corn Ferry finals category, and you can at least shuffle up if you play well.
What is it about Columbus?
I don't know. I like that place.
You got a win in a top five now, right?
Yeah. I played pretty good that week. I left a few out there, just a couple silly things. But I guess it's just one of those places. I feel like if you're playing well, you're going to do all right. And, you know, if you're not, it's going to kind of beat you up. And, you know, 10 to 12 under is always pretty good there. You know, if you shoot one or two under one day, you're not going to get lapped.
Yeah, and we were following it quite a bit. I don't know if you know this about Stuart here, but his brother-in-law is Brendan Todd.
Oh, nice. Yeah. He's had a heck of a comeback.
Yeah, so he's actually been on here a couple of times, and he's a good friend of good friend of mine now, and family to Stuart.
We keep awesome. So we kept up with the Corn Ferry finals pretty regularly there the last couple of weeks. Yeah. And then I told JP, I said, see if Robert Streb wants to come on. And then he told me, I was like, well, I hope 9 ain't gonna be too late. And he said, oh, he's not playing this week.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Well, yeah. All right. But I guess we're
taking time away from his family now.
But I guess you're 10th in the 10th in the other 1 through 25 standings going into this week, and I know you're secure in your spot, but I guess you're not that worried about where you start in that 1 through 50 reshuffle.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to matter a little bit for. I mean, it could matter for Safeway, Vegas, Houston, Mexico, because they're a little bit smaller fields. But I don't know. I kind of took the chance of being rested and ready to go at Greenbrier over. Trying to get a little bit better number, taking 5 days off and going right back to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have a card. I don't really know what the number will be yet, obviously.
So speaking of something like Greenbrier, where you've had some big success, do you pay any attention to DraftKings, or how much do you hear about it out there on your while you're out on tour?
Not much. I feel like you probably hear more about it on social media if you're having a pretty good year and you have a bad day or something. people will tend to get into you like, you screwed up, you ruined my weekend, why are you so bad? But outside of that, not too often. You'll hear the odd fan say, hey, I picked you this week, play well.
Great. Like your $5 pick's really going to bother me.
Yes.
Speaking of social media, I mean, you've got a viral video out there with your club bro guy, Flip It.
How did that happen? We're going to have to retweet that tomorrow when we put this up, but how did that go down?
I guess I'd met him before, but it'd been a long time ago, and a friend of a friend is real tight with him, and he's like, hey, do you want to do this? I'm like, yeah, sure. And you know, he's like, all right, well, here it is. And you know, went and did the whole shoot, and he's got his whole setup, and I was pretty pumped. We got through like we went right through it, and I didn't laugh or anything, and I think he forgot to put his sunglasses on or something. And then we had to do more takes, and I couldn't do it.
JP showed me earlier in the year, and I mean, by the end of it, you can just tell you're visibly laughing so hard at that.
Is he actually a club pro in Kansas City?
No, he's not. He
knows so much about the industry, though.
He does. He's a, you know, he's played a lot of golf, been around the club a lot. I got to think he's real tight with a couple of guys that do it for a living.
Yeah.
But
he's not.
Yeah,
really.
He knows a lot about it, and he does a pretty good job at kind of poking fun at it.
I'll tell you, I don't know if you ever listened to his podcast, but his interviews with some of those guys were top of the line. I mean, just he actually did a lot of good research and had some funny stuff in there, and He's the best. And then you get those Tawny commercials. And
oh, yeah. He does his research, and he does a good job of, yeah, definitely making it, interactive and funny for the listener.
Yeah.
And if you hadn't seen it, like I said, we'll put it out there. But basically, he puts a noodle. Doesn't he put a noodle in between his legs? And then tells you to swing under it and flip, just really flip it.
He makes him yell.
And flip yell it. Flip it.
Yeah, he called it the two-man hump the swim noodle drill.
That was awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, where he comes up with it all, I don't really know.
That's what blows my mind, because I'm thinking he's had to be in the industry where he's dealing with, like, ladies member guests and whatnot to come up with this stuff. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Can he play?
I think he's a pretty decent player. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't got out and played with him, but, yeah, I think he's all right.
It's funny.
Now for people that don't know, you play with no glove and a 10 finger grip.
Yeah.
You know, do you work with anybody, or did anybody growing up try to get you to really change that, or, you know, it's unconventional this day and age?
Yeah, nobody didn't take too many lessons growing up. I took a couple from one fellow when I was, I don't know what I was, 10 or 11, and then 12, something like that. And then a guy, Tosh Hayes, who I still work with, he was helping a high school teammate of mine. And he just never really made me change much, just tried to kind of, more perfect what I already had to work with instead of making a big overhaul with grip, swing kind of thing, which I really liked. Some people do really well with those overhauls. I've seen it mess people up too, so I was just happy I could kind of just work with him and kind of tweak things as we went. It's kind of panned out.
How do you do it with no glove, though? Like, I need, like, three gloves. I get that question a lot,
but I guess, like, if you got one glove, why don't you have two?
I don't know. Like, my hands are sweating right now. I'm nervous talking to you.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess my hands just don't sweat that bad. It was more of a feel thing as a kid. It just felt funny having a glove on one hand, not the other. As I got older, I just never got around to wearing one.
Hmm.
Well, probably saved my old man some money.
Yeah, you did that, but I'm sure you get, like, the FootJoy allotment in your locker every week, right?
Yeah, I still get them. Get it on that Daryl survey.
I'll have to get you my mailing address after this.
Yeah, so my dad and brother got a pretty good stack of ones because I get the same as hand, and then it's terrible, but I keep a few in there in case I hit somebody, so I got something to sign and give them.
You ever done that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Unfortunately, I hit a guy in LA this year with my noggin on the last hole.
Oh, dang. That was, like, the first time we were trying to talk to you. It's funny. Like, I was looking back some notes that I had made up to try and bring up, and one of them was how you were going to play 10 at Riviera.
Driver. Takes double out of play for me.
That's not where you hit the guy.
No, I was having to finish Saturday morning, and it was freezing cold in the wind. And I had 3-wood at 18. And it's this old guy and his wife's pin high left. I don't know what it would have been, 15 yards from the hole.
Ooh.
And sure enough, it's literally the only two people in the hole. Just clocked him right in the back of the head.
Oof. I mean, how much does that affect? I mean, luckily, I guess it was your last hole, but I mean, how much does that affect you during the round? Is that something that sticks with you for a little bit?
It's pretty bothersome. He didn't go down or anything, and we almost made him have to go to the doctor. Sometimes guys don't. And then one year I hit a guy at the Players that knocked him out and had to get stitches, and it bothers you a little bit just because you can't really help them. You can't see if they're all right. You kind of have to, keep trucking along.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go. You just got to keep moving.
Well, yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of your good golf.
Yeah, some more uplifting stuff here.
Let's not get stuck on the hitting people in the head.
We're in Georgia, by the way, Robert. And we're in Georgia, just north of Atlanta, Gainesville. You actually played the Hooters event here.
Oh, yes, I did. It got rained out, didn't
you? Yeah, you played at Chattahoochee. But you got your lone win on the PGA Tour at the McGladrey down at Sea Island, where a bunch of our friends are from. Walk us through that week and kind of that feeling. And I know it's probably hard to put in words how to change your life, but that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was definitely kind of unexpected. The first hole of the tournament, I hit like a duck hook off the toe of the driver into the wind into a bush on number one, made double. This was back when you only played the seaside course. I mean, this driveway like 240 right in the bush. So ended up doing all right the rest of the round, and just kind of hanging around. And then Sunday, kind of caught fire. I was going good early and sputtered a little in the middle, and then I think I birdied, I don't know what it was, four or five holes in a row. What was it? Four in a row, 14, 15, 16, 17. Then part 18, and I had to wait around a really long time. The field was a huge log jam. Ended up getting in that playoff and, kind of snuck by on 18, kind of long two putt par, and then went back 17 and hit one in tight. And, luckily Brendan Young didn't make his 20, 25 footer. So it was huge. I just kept my card for the first time the year before out of that 126 to 150 category. And, it got me that season, two more seasons, which also got me to 5 years, which makes you eligible for pension too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's a real big deal. It got you in all the majors the next year too.
Yeah.
Speaking of majors, what's it about the PGA? I mean, you got two top tens there. You got the low, you're tied for the lowest round with a bunch of other people in a major history. I don't know if many people out there know, but he shot 63 in 2016. Second round?
Yes.
Yeah, so what's it about the PGA versus other majors?
I don't know. Augusta pretty much chewed me up and spit me out twice. but the PGA, I don't know, I guess. Whatever it is, those setups seem to be a little bit more friendly to me, and I was just happened to be playing some pretty good golf at the time. At both of them where I finished, I guess it was 10th and 7th.
Back-to-back years, right?
Yeah. And I think I finished like 22nd or something in Charlotte the next year, but that was a familiar course. But something about them, they seem to suit my eye a little better than the rest of them.
Now going back to you said Augusta chewed you up and spit you out. What is it, about that place? Because it does that to, other than Fuzzy Zeller, it does that to almost every first-timer. What is it about that place? Is it just the week and kind of the build-up to it? Do you think that throws some people off, or what was your experience like there?
The first week's pretty busy. You spend a lot of time trying to get your tickets organized, accommodations organized, and there's just a lot going on. It's busy getting in, getting out. You're trying to learn all the stuff. It's got that big aura about it. So maybe some of that the first year, and then the second year just it was a little windy, got off to a crummy start, and that was that. But it's a busy week.
You probably didn't realize how many friends you had until you made it to the Masters.
Yeah, I think people think those tickets are a little easier to come by than they are. But, you're trying to make friends in there, family in there, and get all that done and organized a little ways before the tournament so you can just do your thing. But,
yeah,
it's a busy week, but it's really neat being there. The par 3 is awesome. It's one of those things that has a huge build up, but it lives up to it too. There's not much you can fault about that place.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get back there and maybe this spring.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Speaking of getting tickets, I remember one story. I was in DC one year and I reached out to you. I probably get annoying at times, I'm sure, but I came out to Congressional. You got me and my brother a couple of tickets, and We watched your whole round. We were betting on like every shot. You made me a bunch of money that day. I mean, you made a bomb on the first hole we watched you on, and we had a good time out there watching you for that whole day.
Perfect. That place is a tough walk.
That's a big, big, big golf course.
Yes, it is. That's a big, tough golf course.
Yeah. One last, not last thing, one more thing about majors. I'm sure you look ahead maybe with schedules, but with your connection to Rochester, Oak Hill's hosting the PGA again in 2023. Is that on your radar yet? Or?
Yeah, I was pretty sad when I missed out the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have taken a lot, but I like going up there, obviously. My dad being from there, my aunt and cousins still live there, so it's just cool. I always liked going there for the Monroe. I don't know, cool place, I guess, for me to go. Obviously, the golf's really good, so if I can find a way to get there, I would love to.
Have you played Oak Hill?
Nope, never been there. I don't even know where it is.
It's like 2.5 minutes from Monroe.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, you could hit like 3 drives and probably get there.
I had no idea.
Talking about some of the traveling, how difficult is it? Because I see some of the stuff on social media, and it looks like your family travels with you a decent amount, or at least they have at times. I mean, how difficult of an adjustment is that when you first start having kids, trying to figure that out?
Yeah, it's different. You travel with an amazing amount of junk.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of, as you go along, you kind of work out what you need, what you don't need. But they, you know, they have a really nice child care set up out there. They have the same teachers that travel, same toys. You can leave them, I think, up to 6 hours Wednesday to Sunday. So Maggie can get a break and go out and watch golf or do whatever. She usually comes out and watches. But I try to take them along just, you know, it's nice for them to get out. It's nice for us to kind of be a family because you're gone whatever it is 30 weeks a year, and it's pretty tough and when the kids start school and such, so we try to take them out and travel while we can.
Yeah. So another question that we always ask our guests, we've gotten a lot of mixed responses on this one: would you ever let JP caddy for you?
Ooh, I don't know. That's questionable. Where's it at?
Well, you make the call. I will say we've had Pat and Kazire on here, and he said no because he felt like JP would bug him about it all the time. So we've had that too.
I don't know. Maybe.
I've caddied for Dom before.
He's caddied for Nancy Lopez and Dom and Trevor Sluman.
I caddied on the Corn Ferry. I caddied at Oak Hill this summer in the senior PGA.
Oh, man. Dom, what you caddy?
We got a top 10 in the BMW.
In Greenville?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'll have to ask him about that.
You just see me when I'm out watching Dom. That's a different JP. I always surprise. I'm sure you get shocked. Like every time Dom's playing and it's like a 6-hour drive, I'm there. And most of the time, for whatever reason, they get like opposite time. So I'll go out and watch Streb play his front nine or whatever. And he'll be walking off a hole and he's like, JP, what the are you doing here?
So JP just kind of shows up everywhere out there on tour.
Yeah, he surprises me from time to time.
I think it was in like Eagle Point. I saw you one time and you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's exactly where you surprised me. Did not expect to see you there.
Yeah.
All right, so the name of the podcast is AutoPress. What is the most AutoPress move you see in a pro-am out there?
Or on tour.
The most what now?
AutoPress move, like putting with a glove on or using a poker chip.
I don't know. That is a great question.
We've had a lot of responses to this one, too.
And if you want to throw Bryson DeChambeau under the bus for living, we can do that.
What was that?
I said, if you just want to throw Bryson DeChambeau under the bus just for, like, living out there, we can
do I'm going to guess that's probably already happened a few times. I don't know. That is a good question.
You got to see a lot of stuff in pro-ams.
Would you think that you putting out with a wedge for the last nine holes would be an auto press if you hadn't have made the playoffs?
If I had what now?
If you hadn't have made the playoff in Greenbrier, was putting with a wedge an auto press?
Oh, well, yeah, there was a lot of people trying to get me to putt with that wedge in the playoffs. I thought about it.
Come on, you got to have something here.
Pro-ams. That is a... You see everything.
Like head covers on irons?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's at least one set of Ping I 2s. There's... there's always the guy that's the 3 handicap that shoots 92. There's the guy that's the 16 that shoots 75. I don't know. Wait. Well, I don't know. There's a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Do you gamble in your...
I had a few guys in Canada one year after I'd done well at Greenbrier putting with the wedge. They all thought it was funny the first 3 holes to putt with their wedge.
They're mocking.
Getting a good laugh out of that.
That's pretty creative.
And I was like, oh, never seen that before.
One last question. I know that we're pushing the time here a little bit, but I wanted to know, like, your practice round deal. Do you play with the same people every week? Who might they be, and do you do a lot of gambling?
I am not much of a gambler. I've played a few little gambling matches, and I usually come out on the short end of the stick. I don't think I'm playing with the same people. King Murth is usually a sleeping kind of guy. Troy Merritt's hit and miss. I'll play a couple with Malnati from time to time. My first year, I used to play with Aaron Watkins and Alistair Presnell, Lee Williams a lot. And they all end up losing their card and doing different things. But it's kind of whoever's around.
Did you say Lee Williams?
Yeah.
No.
Stewart played college golf with him.
Okay.
Yeah, lived with him for 3 years. If you can imagine that, trying to fit in his schedule.
Yeah, you can't do it.
it's his schedule, and that's it.
Yeah.
It was our rookie year. They gave us gift cards to Roots Chris at Greensboro. They gave us like $100. I'm like, okay. They're all doing something. So we were like, okay, well, why don't we just take our caddies while we'll go eat? I mean, we figured this out that. 4:45 or something, pouring rain outside. We call Lee. Hey, Lee, you want to go eat with us and spend that gift card? Oh, sorry, guys, I already got dinner. I'm done for the night. Are you kidding me?
He was getting up at 4:30 the next day to start stretching.
Start hitting wedges.
Hitting chip shots and putts and everything else.
Oh, yeah. I think I stayed with him in Chile on the web, and I had to borrow his clothes because my bag disappeared for a day or two.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, we were about the same size. Those pants weren't high waters or dragging the ground.
They were probably pleated.
What's that?
They were probably pleated.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't remember, but I'm sure they were.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for doing this. I know we've been pretty excited to try and get you on for a while, and hopefully I'll get out to see you play a little bit this fall somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, just I guess either let me know or I'll see you on some random hole somewhere.
Yeah, I'll just sneak out there.
Sounds about right.
All right, thanks, Robert. We enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
See you.
Bye.